This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Raise Your Game. Now, leadership teams often spend millions of dollars trying to improve their people and culture and yet still experience a drag that prevents individuals from reaching their true potential within the wider organization. We're talking about leadership, obviously. I'm here with Cliff Chalon, who is a global authority on world-class performance through people and culture. With over 15 years of working exclusively with senior executives who are responsible for building their organization's performance culture, he's a master at generating tangible and significant improvements in performance. And this is the second time we've spoken. Welcome back, Cliff.
Thank you, Frida. It's good to be back.
It's been a long time.
It has indeed.
All right. So this is a book that you've also written, right? Achieving World-Class Performance. Subtitle. The subtitle always says it all. 10 yes. Truths Every Senior Executive Must Understand to Ensure That People and Culture Produce World-Class Performance. So you've been doing this for over 15 years, and this is the first published book. You've done e-books and all that. What led you to write this one?
That's a very good question, Frida. I guess what led me to conclude that I should comment on some of the things that I've observed in my practice for this length of time. In truth, the 10 truths were simply 10 things that I noticed kept popping up all the time. They were there in small instances, in large instances, in large and small organizations, regardless of where. So right across the Asia-Pacific region, I was noticing that the same things kept popping up
as issues and challenges. It's regardless of where you're from, even.
Absolutely. It transcends cultures. It transcends locations. It just didn't matter where. As long as there were people and a culture, the same things were emerging. So I thought, well, this can't be just pure coincidence. This is a pattern. So I thought I should record this somehow. And I started monitoring it a bit closer, I guess, over the last 10 years or more, until finally I realized that I ought to put this down just to keep a record of it, for one thing, but also to, in my way, to leave something for people to recognize that this is going on. Mm. And it's something that they ought to just take on board as the traps that you can fall into so easily,
right,
with all the pressures that are.
Right. And the moment they're people, there are going to be challenges.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, before we go into a 10th truth, sure, though, or a couple of truths anyway, were there some truths that were more pertinent than the others? Because 10 was always good for a book. But anyway, like, were there ones that were more glaring than the rest?
I'd have to say yes. There are a few that popped up on a more frequent occasion. Mm-hmm. I guess we're in the modern era of the Industrial Revolution 4.0 and all the tech that goes with that. So change was something that was ever present, mm-hmm, as also was strategy and teams. And just that whole idea about some of these, so shall we call them, newfound strategies and tools and techniques and tactics, mm, that amounted to what I call fads. Mm. So not that they are fads in their own right, but the way in which they're applied is faddish, if you like.
Right.
So in noting those things, I felt they were cropping up far too often, that purely meant that they were coincidence, that this was a pattern. Mm. And I simply decided that I'd like to share that with people.
All right. I want to bring up then that one about change, right?
And sure.
It says here, our people understand they need to change, but they often don't adapt. So why is that, and what can we do to change that?
Okay. Straight to the hard questions.
Yeah.
Change does strange things to people, and yet, as human beings, we are naturally disposed to change. We could not be the fully formed adult we are today without some significant change. So to say that humans and change are natural enemies is false. Mm. However, to say that change brings about certain levels of resistance is very true. Mm. In fact, in the sessions that I do with senior executives, I often say that if you use the word change, just remember that the next word should be resistance.
Okay.
However small, however tiny, or however non-threatening, there will still be
resistance.
Some resistance. It's just a natural human phenomenon. So knowing that, you go into a change forearmed, or you should do, so that you can prepare for that change. And as I said, it's not just about the size of the change, that so you prepare more for a large change and less for a small change. All types and sizes of change require the preparation that it takes to help that change to be successful.
Okay, so when you we then change the words, right?
Yes.
And use another hot one, transformation. Does that make a difference?
It does and it doesn't. Okay. I guess there are lots of definitions out there. To my mind, transformation is a type of change. So there are several types of change at the I suppose common end. You might look at incremental change, as the Kaizen sort of movement with continuous improvement, so one small percentage of change on a daily basis and so on. So there's that type of it. There's more developmental change, there's evolutionary change, and there, of course, is change brought about by pressure, which we call crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And the last of those types of changes would be transformational, which is where the pressure, the distinction between, shall we say, transitionary type change from one system to another to a transformation, is where the pressure comes from within. You create your own pressure. So companies like Toyota, for example, are brilliant at creating their own pressure for their own transformational change within the organization. What that does is make them much more proactive. So they're putting pressure on themselves internally before the external pressure hits and before they get into crisis, which is very smart.
Right.
So they're making large-scale paradigm shift type change well before they need to.
Right.
So they're better prepared.
And I think organizations still just have to do this on an ongoing basis. It's actually part of the business process, so to speak.
Absolutely. There's a comment in the book where I quote Jack Welch, who famously said, if the rate of change outside is greater than what's happening inside, the end is near.
So, I mean, can you give an example of someone you work with in that change process, you know, and what happened, you know, just a story that you can share with us?
Yes, there are several instances. I guess if I can collect a few from of the major stories, some of them are in the book, that I comment on. Probably the most stark recently would be a change where we took a government agency from being funded by the public purse to one that was much more commercially sustainable. Hmm. Now, that meant a huge mindset shift as well as the behavioral aspects that went with that. So we simply had to sit down with them and say, this is what it means to be commercially sustainable. And that if you don't do that, then the options become very clear to government, where they could outsource your services rather than keep you going. So, so the messaging was quite clear and quite hard in a way, but that was the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So the short of it all was that we went through that process to determining what would it take to go from where we are now with our current public service type mindset to where we ought to be with a much more commercial mindset. And once we did that, so in other words, you're establishing where you are now in your delta state or the future state. Once you're there, you can then reverse engineer from there to build a bridge and the steps it takes to get there.
Right. I'm not too sure how large this organization is, but how long did that process take?
Yes. Now, for them, it was a good two-year transition, and there are others similar to that sort of period. But I hesitate to put a time frame on it because there are so many things, so many variables, so many factors to consider. Every company is different.
Right.
So you might say, okay, that could happen a lot quicker in a small company. Well, not necessarily. It depends on their start point, how much they have to do, what the complexities are, the caliber and the capabilities of people. There, as I said, many, many variables. So you might think a small company would be able to move a lot quicker, but this is not necessarily true, and that large companies would be slower. Well, Not really. Right. It depends on how they position the capability levels, the sophistication of the companies to make change. The change readiness turns out to be a critical factor.
Right. Okay, we'll talk about other truths in just a moment. I'm here with Cliff Chalon talking about his book, Achieving World-Class Performance. Stay tuned to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Good morning. You're listening to Raise Your Game. If you've just joined us, Frida Liu here speaking to Cliff Chalon, talking about his book, Achieving World-Class Performance, 10 Truths Every Senior Executive Must Understand to Ensure Their People and Culture Produce World-Class Performance. So 10 truths, we're not going to go all through 10 because you've got to buy the book. We just went through one earlier on. Our people understand they need to change, but they often don't adapt is one truth. Another one, which is very interesting because this was happening to me this afternoon. Chapter 9, we're getting feedback from our people and performance reviews, but are we getting to the truth? Tell me about that one.
Yes. And I guess the take that I have on that is that feedback is another one of those words that's often misused and misunderstood. The process of performance reviews or appraisals, to my mind, has lost its way. It's lost its why, the reasoning behind why we have such a system. The other aspect to that is that we've evolved to such an extent now with HR systems that are very sophisticated. They're online. You can do them at your desk or certainly there's computerized versions of these systems. So in a lot of ways, to my mind, the means has overtaken the end.
Okay.
So the end point being that a feedback is meant to be a two-way dialogue.
Mm.
The whole review process was simply revolved around that. Why don't you and I, as a subordinate and employee, as a manager, sit down and spend an hour or so together just looking at what's happened in the role. Were you successful? Were you not successful? Were there things that got in the way? How can I help you to get back on track? How can I help you to get better or even develop up to your next level of aspiration? That's the sort of honest, transparent discussion that ought to take place in a typical review, to my mind.
Right. However,
comma... This doesn't always eventuate. In the book, I highlight many of the classic traps that people fall into, not least of which bias of various types, the stereotyping, the leniency, the angel devil syndrome, where either someone's fantastic and they can do nothing that's wrong, or they're a devil and they always get things wrong. Mm. So this kind of bias notion can impact the review that someone gives of another person. So when that kind of behavior starts to be present in an appraisal interview, you tend to get sidetracked and becomes much more subjective. It's no longer a dialogue, it's more monologue. I'm sitting here in judgment of you, which is, of course, the wrong way.
In judgment of you.
Yes. So it was never, ever intended to be that way. And then we complicated things unnecessarily by putting in quite sophisticated rating systems, numbering systems, and, you're a grade 2.0, whatever that is. It's not necessary. At the end of the day, feedback is neutral, and it's about having that dialogue. And it's nothing more than saying, how have you gone in this last period? How can we make it better for you next time? What other things do we need to consider to make those things work out for you?
Right. So, and that... Because I think a lot of people go into – I haven't had anyone go into a review happy because they just feel they're being criticized. They feel they're what? So how do we make, I guess, a review enjoyable? Do we then do more frequent reviews? You know, so there's not an annual thing and you're like, you're forgetting it. Do we then meet more often so that really at the end of the year, it's just, a summary of discussions over the year?
Absolutely right. You've picked the exact way it ought to be done, which is with frequency, with with genuine attempts to have that dialogue, which is not about one way.
Genuine attempts at the dialogue.
At the dialogue, yes. So that we are having an open, transparent conversation, which is neutral to a large extent. It's not about judgment or you did this wrong, you did that right. It's about saying, how do we go? What can we do better next time round? And that need not happen on a quarterly, six-monthly, annual basis, although you may want to wrap it up at some point in a year, whenever that's convenient. That kind of makes sense. So this past year, these are all the things we noticed. Here's an aggregation of that, and here's some ways in which we can deal with that going forward. That makes sense. Mm. But to leave it to quarterly reviews, six-monthly reviews, and then that annual period, that, to my mind, is a little too contrived.
Right.
I think it should happen on a much more frequent basis.
Right.
At least monthly, maybe even a quick catch-up every week.
Mm.
Why not?
Okay. One more. Chapter 10, we can solve our people and culture challenges internally. We really don't need an external perspective.
Yes. Thank you for raising that. It's basically aimed at reaching out for help. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying, can someone help me with understanding what's going on, particularly in things like culture?
Right.
Can someone help me to make sense of what is going on and give me a way to deal with some of the issues and challenges that I'm facing? That's all it is.
Hmm.
All too often, because we have large departments, usually HR departments and such in the people area, we think we can handle everything internally.
Hmm.
And while that may be true for most organizations, it's not a bad idea to take an external perspective every now and then, to have someone come in, perhaps do some assessment for you, at least provide some advice or some of the latest thinking, which could inform your practice so much better than simply trying to do it all yourself.
I think it's just blind spots, right?
Exactly.
And it's just like, you know, if we're doing it right, great, right? If we're not doing it right, I mean, every organization would always have areas to improve, even if you're doing it right. Because here's a comment you said, we're already successful.
Yes.
So why would I need you? Right?
Exactly. And that was a deliberate comment to say, just because you're successful now, there is no guarantee that you will continue to be successful. You ought to be looking at your situation constantly. So your past success is no guarantee of the future.
Hmm.
So to take a neutral stance and say every now and then, I will get a perspective on this that is not internally driven. It's just someone coming in and giving us an external perspective. That's healthy. It's good for the organization. It prevents you from becoming insular. There's the expression that says you can't see the forest for the trees. You're so close to what you're doing, and add to that the changes and added pressures and the vagaries of what we call a VUCA world these days, automation and so on. There's so much to consider. So you can get lost in all of that. So to have a moment in time where you say, we'll just sit down here and get someone to just thresh out things with us and help us to see things in a way that perhaps we would not have had we done this ourselves.
Yeah, and I think we'd see, I mean, just getting a view from the outside when you're successful in addressing minor concerns would be better than addressing major concerns when the termites have eaten at the foundation.
Absolutely. You don't know sometimes what's going on. It's a bit like your own body. You have no clue what's going on. Every now and then you go and take more major medical examinations just to be sure that everything on the inside seems to be in good order.
So why should someone get hold of your book?
Well, in fact, it's very easy. They simply go into the website, which is shalonpc.com, and they'll see a couple of spiels on what the book's all about and why the intent behind it world-class performance? Because I believe that people can achieve, any organization can achieve world-class performance if they attend to these two crucial attributes. Simply answer the prompts there and you can get one for free, Frida.
Shalon, which is, but it's C-H-A-L-O-N-P-C.
Correct. You just go in there and you can order your copy.
All right. Thanks for being with us. Good to see you again. Cliff Chalon talking about his book, Achieving World-Class Performance. You've been listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.